The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, welcome to this interview episode of Thinking Outside the Long Box. On the line, I have Norm, Val, and Bobby. Norm is the writer of the sequels that's coming out on Fanbase Press, and Val and Bobby are artists. Val is the main artist, and Bobby's going to be doing some guest stuff. How are you guys doing today?
Doing good. Thanks for having us.
Of course. So, you know, I guess the most basic, easiest way to get started with this interview is to ask you guys, like, kind of what's the origin, you know, where's the starting point of, you know, the sequels as a project?
Well, the sequels, in brief, is about four people who, when they were children in the 80s, they were like the main characters in a big Spielberg style movie adventure. And now they've grown up, they're in their 40s and they're kind of miserable. And they get brought together into sort of a support group and try to relive their pasts, and hijinks ensue. The project really came from my general love of nostalgia. And in particular, I lived not too far from where a lot of E.T. was shot. And I was walking through a park one day that features in the movie, was like looking around at the area and trying to see if I could, you know, pick out like, oh, was that house, you know, did they ride their bikes past that or whatever? And just thinking about how the area had changed. And that got me to thinking about like, well, where would those kids be today? And like, what happens if you grow up and you met an alien and you live with the knowledge that we're not alone in the universe, but the alien's gone now? Like, what, like, can you be a normal adult? And then that was sort of a springboard into thinking about like other movies that I loved as a kid and like what would happen to those kids. And then I thought like, oh, well, what if they could all meet like Avengers style? And then so then I sat down and invented my own characters who could sort of work as stand-ins so that Ambling didn't sue me.
Yeah, definitely don't get sued by a powerhouse movie company. That is not something that you want to have happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it.
So artistically, like, do you take, are you looking at it also from like a nostalgia perspective, or how are you guys approaching it artistically?
I'm doing the flashback pages to the original adventures they had as kids, and the nostalgia is a huge factor in that. We're even bringing back like the dot screen color printing process and giving it that like 1980s comics look for the flashback pages.
That's awesome.
I do the modern side of things. So when they're older, what I do with it is I kind of have like a little bit of a fuzzier brush when I'm inking and everything. So it kind of gives it a little bit of a, like, I don't know, like a more fuzzy kind of analog feel to it. That's one of the ways I make it kind of more like nostalgic feeling. The way I color also, there's a couple of pages there where I make it kind of more like a sepia tone filter almost, just to make it kind of feel older when they're kind of reminiscing about their adventures.
That's awesome. When you're approaching this, like, obviously, you know, you guys aren't kids, you know, you're not, you know, it doesn't seem like you'd be younger people because you're looking at nostalgia and appreciating it. What are some of the things that you personally like drew on? Like, you know, you mentioned like the park and E.T. What are some other things where you're just like, man, I remember this, loving this so much, I really want to get it into this book?
Oh, well, like I ended up sitting down and just rewatching a ton of movies from that era, particularly the kid family adventure kind of stuff. And I looked a lot for, like, I don't want to say tropes because I think that can have a negative connotation, but just the patterns that repeated. And, you know, you wanted to make sure that there were hints of that same sort of like those storytelling milestones or signposts in what we were creating, so that even though these are entirely new adventures that we've all created, it feels like it belongs to the era.
When, you know, so when you're approaching like the project, you have, you know, this idea of kind of throwing the adult version of these kids into effectively a sequel, like hence the titles. Do you, are there like, sorry, this is like a super dumb question that I thought of like a couple days ago. are there like sequels that you love that you feel are better than the original one that you're kind of like, man, I want to give this comic that feel because I loved it so much. I know it's a weird kind of poorly formed question, but
I think Empire, I think, is almost universally agreed to be a little bit better than A New Hope.
Right.
I was just the Godfather part two.
Yeah, Godfather. I really, in terms of for this project, so the format of this project is it's 4-issue series and there are 4 main characters. So every issue is sort of like point of view by one of the characters. And so we get a peek at their past adventure when they were a child, and then we watch them age a bit and we see how that adventure informs the adult that they become. But then the back half of each issue is one singular narrative that involves all 4 of them, like all kind of having one collective sequel that's a sequel to every one of their adventures.
Nice.
So it's really like 5 stories linked up, you know, each individual kid story and then the big sequel united. So really the closest thing to that might be, like I said, like the Avengers almost, where it has to work as a sequel to every individual character's thing, and they all have to have their moment to shine. So that's really what I looked at for the main narrative, actually, is a more modern way of sequelizing or serializing adventures that we're seeing now. And then for the past adventures, that's where I really dug in on the 80s nostalgia.
Right. So it's kind of like taking that shared universe idea and saying, here's the separate individuals, but they all dwell within like this same broader scope kind of idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you're doing this, you know, you're creating this idea, you know, you're relying heavily on nostalgia. Are you afraid of it kind of getting lost in the shuffle of, like, you know, so many other like shows like Stranger Things and like other comics and TV that like lean so heavily on it? Like, what are you working on to make it stand out?
I think the modern setting for the majority of the book is what gives us a little bit of uniqueness. It isn't just like Stranger Things or It, which both of which I love. But it's about those repercussions of that kind of adventure, but in 2019, which is, I think, not something at least that I had seen before.
Right.
So I hope that helps us stand out amongst all the other 80s retro material right now.
So I was looking at the covers of the books, and they're awesome. Like this idea, they feel kind of like somewhere in between like a VHS cassette and like like an Atari game, where like I don't know if you guys have ever seen the Atari art book that has all of the covers.
Yeah.
it reminded me a lot of that. I don't know. I'm not 100% sure how old you guys are, which is, I don't want to ask because it's like totally a dick thing to do. But like, I just remember staring at like the covers of Atari video games and like desperately wanting to buy it and saving my allowance and then finally buying the game, then plugging it into the console and being like, this is nothing like the cover. Like, but
it's true.
But
we're all looking at that little cartridge and being like, why can't it look like that?
Yeah, this is so, yeah.
Which I guess that's the era we live in now, though, is the video games do look like the box art now.
I know. Isn't that crazy that we finally got there? Like, so
it's the future, man.
Well, okay, this is totally tangential, but I have to talk about this since we brought it up. Video games look like their covers, and you can buy a video phone like that's like call dad, and dad comes up on your screen, and you talk to your dad on like a Facebook portal.
And you can even wear 2 giant ties for some reason at the same time right. While you're doing it. If you felt like doing that,
it's the damn, Jetsons. So when
we have robots that vacuum first, it is the Jetsons.
It is the Jetsons. Like, it's crazy.
We should, since we mentioned the covers, Don's not with us now, but credit to Don Aguillo for his work on those. He did a really fantastic job sort of designing like the movie poster for the adventure that each individual character would have had. So yeah, every cover is one of those. So thank you, Don.
Yeah, the covers are amazing, Don. Good job.
It's cool because they're like so much in. So this is where I was actually going with that before I got distracted by the Facebook portal. So the covers I feel are awesome because they serve like the same purpose that like those old like video game covers serve, where it draws you in, it makes you excited for it. Like, but then looking at like the interior art and, you know, the actual content of the comic, it's nothing like the Atari, where it's actually, oh, this is awesome. So we do live in the future, I guess.
That's good. That's good.
Full circle. But so this idea of having like you said, they're kind of designed as movie posters, and like I saw them a little bit different. I think it's just because they have like a border on the side of them that look like they're very uniform, much like the old like Nintendo boxes. Like every mm-hmm. Nintendo box looked exactly the same with a cool picture. But I love this idea of like latching on to the, you know, the nostalgia factor to like help draw people in. When you're approaching other people, you're talking about the book and stuff, like as the artist and as the writer, like what other ways are you guys trying to like draw people into the book?
That's a good question.
Yeah. Cause to me, the story is, it's actually a very modern story. Cause it's about my own addiction to nostalgia and sort of like the whole Generation X, it feels like we're the first generation that's held on to our childhood as tightly as we have. And it isn't just like the nerds, quote unquote, anymore. It feels like everybody to at least some degree, you know, has a connection to things like Optimus Prime or to the Ghostbusters or, you know, Kermit the Frog or just any of that. We all love it so much. And you can walk into, you know, just any public place and see people our age with the t-shirts on or, you know, passing that same franchise down to their children with, you know, whatever new toy it is or whatever. And, you know, previous generations, like they just, oh, Howdy Doody's cool, but now I'm an adult and I got things to do and they don't deal with it. So I feel like that story of nostalgia is actually kind of a modern thing. And that's what I was trying to explore in creating these characters and establishing what their memory had done to them, if that makes sense.
It does.
I think starting the issue off with that very 1980s comic book look on page one, it really it delivers kind of a jolt of nostalgia, like as soon as you open the book. Hopefully that draws people in as well.
I would say it'd be amazing to do like half of it in like that old print stock and then half of it in the glossy, but that would be like $1 million to produce. Like I have this genius idea, guys. It's only going to cost us like the national deficit. No biggie. So what are, you know, as you're going through this, like what are some of the things that you wish wouldn't have been like redone? Like we all have like these amazing, like nostalgic love of, you know, like G.I. Joe or like He-Man and things like that. But there's so many people trying to like pander and cater to like the Generation X, like spending dollars by releasing like movies and TV and comic books and, you know, all these things that are geared towards nostalgia. And then when you look at the product, you're just like, that is garbage. Like, what are some of the things that you just wish wouldn't have come back out so that you could just enjoy the old one without having to go, well, there is that awful other one.
I keep that stuff pretty separate. I'm all for trying to revisit anything, and yeah, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But
I just rewatched Crystal Skull, and I was just, if you want to talk about that, the Indiana Jones trilogy is great, and then there's the Crystal Skull, which is a movie. I don't mind that movie exists. I just wish it was better. So many baffling, those weird choices made during that.
Those CG gophers.
The gophers. Like, I was okay. We start out with the gopher shot. I'm willing to forgive one cartoon gopher. That's fine. You know? And then the movie had some good things in it. But then the whole thing was just like, oh, why did that happen? And it was so long. It took so long to make that movie. And then every time they'd ask one of, like, Lucas or Spielberg or Harrison Ford about it in an interview, they'd be like, well, we're waiting for the right time before we make that movie. You know, the script has to be just right. And then they went and made Crystal Skulls. So what were they talking about? I don't even know.
They needed that, like, in-between one. There's a good one, and then a terrible one, and then a good one, and a terrible one, and then the next one will be really good again.
I liked Temple of Doom. Didn't say that was terrible.
I just remember when I was a kid and that movie came out, everybody was hyped to see it, and then we all went and saw it, and we were like, what the hell was that?
It was awesome, is what it was.
Oh, okay. I feel like you and I would have had a lot of schoolyard arguments.
Yeah, we would. Short Round was great.
How about you, Val? What's something you wish they just would have never revisited?
I would have to say The Thing. I want to say it's not really a remake, but it pretty much is. It's just so unnecessary. What gets me the most about it is they actually made practical effects for it, and then they just CG'd over all of it.
Yeah.
And it's like, why?
It's baffling to me sometimes. Like, you know, I understand that it's a money making thing. You know, let's remake The Crow. Let's redo this movie. You know, let's do Transformers or like Michael Bay's version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Like, I get that they're just trying to make money and they make a ton of money, so they keep making them. But I guess for every like hardcore nerd that was like a crazy crazed nerd in middle school, we see them and we just don't understand why people are enjoying them. I think sometimes I don't know. I guess that's just me. I get confused when people are like, oh yeah, I love that new, you know, Michael Bay, whatever, hot garbage.
Well, I feel like that's kind of the danger inherent in nostalgia, because nostalgia can be a bad thing too. It can prevent you from enjoying something new if you cling too tightly to how it used to be.
Right. Yeah. Which I definitely do.
The second Bay Turtles film, I enjoyed quite a bit. It's at least as good as Secret of the Ooze. But, you know, so.
It's a low bar, man.
But I love Secret of the Ooze with a cape.
So let's kind of go to that. What are some like nostalgia things that you know are terrible, but you absolutely love them? Like for me, rewatching the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon, it's bad, but I love it. And I've watched it with my youngest daughter probably 3 times now. But man, that is a terrible, terrible show.
I think a lot of cartoons from the era don't hold up as much as you'd want them to. But I will sit down and watch Transformers all day and you know,
be happy with life.
Yeah, no, yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Masters of the Universe for me. That cartoon wasn't good, no. But the Skeletor is still my all-time favorite bad guy.
What a weird voice choice for like a main villain too, and his laugh. Like the most
bumbling boob.
The most unmenacing villain of all time.
What? His voice is dripping with menace. Skeletor.
The Frank Langella Skeletor is quite scary.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I liked Frank Langella as Skeletor. I like when he goes, I dare anything, I'm Skeletor. That was great.
How about you, Val? What's something that you know is awful that you still love anyways?
See, I'm actually a 90s kid, so there's a lot of crap that I watched on WB Kids, which that's probably...
Eek the Cat?
Oh, don't you dare disparage Eek the Cat.
A lot of Pokemon... Well, watched a lot of the Pokemon cartoon.
Oh, that's awesome.
It is not good, but...
But you're part of the cultural zeitgeist now, because Pokemon is a huge deal now.
That's true. And it never went away.
Great.
It's even the same gen. Like, it's still Gen 1.
I don't know what that means. God damn it, I'm old.
Oh. You just don't know about the Pokemon.
I don't. Like, that is like a huge pop culture blind spot for me. Like, my kids come up to me. All of my kids at one point or another have played Pokemon, like the card game and like Pokemon Go and all that stuff. And they come up to me and start talking to me about it. And I just, like the jerk dad I am, completely glaze over and just, that's super interesting. I'm the worst. I feel bad now. I'm going to go read a bunch of Pokemon stuff.
Yeah, you got to bone up.
Got to memorize all 700 of them.
I think that's the problem, is I've put too many like other comic books and things into my brain that 700 Pokemon seems like an incredibly daunting task. But
yeah, there's only like three that you really need to know, right? For Pokemon.
I know Eevee, Pikachu, and Jigglypuff. So there you go. There's three.
There you go.
Yeah.
You don't even need Charizard or Squirtle.
And I'm lost. Sorry.
That's all you need.
So this is what I love about books like your guys, is like this idea of like nostalgia kind of brings us all together. We can talk about all these different things, and like we have, you know, these cultural touchstones that we all, you know, remember. And then we all have our own specific weird little thing, like our own weird little niche that we're obsessed with that maybe not everybody else is obsessed with. And then you're baffled and can't believe that people like you guys. I can't believe I don't know about Pokemon, but I bet there's a dozen things that I would be like, do you remember this? How could you not know about that? You know, it's fun to have those conversations. Are you hoping that like this book kind of inspires those conversations in people that read it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, I do.
Yes.
I don't know if there's more to say.
Correct. Good shout.
I think anytime an artist creates something, they're hoping to inspire someone else with anything. So if we can inspire someone to do something great, then that's the best we can hope for.
I just thought of something also really dumb. Sorry. If you guys make another one, will it be called The Sequels Is?
I've actually been giving thought to what I would call the sequel's sequel, and I haven't come up with anything good.
The sequel
to Electric Boogaloo. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe just part three.
Part three, The Revenge.
Oh man, what are some other great like sequel things? You like? I love part two, Electric Boogaloo. That's always the class.
Sequels, yeah. But the S is a two.
Sequels forever.
Sequels forever. That's pretty good. I like the sequels, but the two for the S, that's very 80s.
Or just a dollar sign.
I think that's a little more 90s than 80s, though.
Like a Mel Brooks joke there.
Well, the sequel should be like all 90s references.
There you go. That's true. They could have other adventures that happened in the 90s that affected their lives.
You could call it sequel. And put the little Caesar's Pizza guy right next to it.
The sequels, Turtles in Time.
Oh, man. You were a Turtles nut, weren't you?
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of turtles in my house.
You were like I was the kid that had the bin of Muscle Men. You were the kid that had the bin of Ninja Turtles. Man, I'm gonna share another stupid memory with you guys. I don't know why this conversation is just about talking about old stuff all of a sudden, but I love it because I love like when books bring out like these ideas. But when I was a kid, like I want to say like first grade, Transformers were just kind of starting to come out, and everybody was really, really excited about them. And there were like four or five kids whose parents like ponied up the however much they cost for like some of the bigger Transformers. And we would like hide them in our desk and then raise our hand to ask to go to the bathroom. and then like hide a Transformer under your shirt, which there's no way the teacher didn't know that was happening. And we would like go into the bathroom and like work on like playing with the Transformers until like the teacher would like come knock on the door and ask us to like come back to class. Like school was way different back in the day. Do you guys have any like weird like kid toy memories? Because toys were such a huge part of like the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, I remember, if I may, I remember how we used to play with our Masters of the Universe figures. And my Skeletor would, because I always played the bad guys and my brother played the good guys, he would capture one of the good guys and put him on the launcher as a punishment. And the launcher was a board that we laid out on an edge and then whacked with a hammer or a baseball bat. And the figure was on the other end of the board and it would just launch him into the stratosphere.
That's awesome.
My dad got us the G.I. Joe aircraft carrier, I think mostly because he wanted it. So he bought it, he assembled it, he put it on a big piece of like plywood that had wheels on it, and it took up one of the parking spots in our garage. So I could open the garage door, I could sail the aircraft carrier out into the driveway and then return it to the garage. So everything I ever played, like I came up with a reason for those characters to have an aircraft carrier, whether it was the He-Man or the Ninja Turtles. Or, it was just like, oh yeah, here's this aircraft carrier, let's go. I wasn't always playing G.I. Joe, but I was always playing with the aircraft carrier.
That's awesome. Very resourceful of you.
I remember I was a big tomboy as a kid, and I never really played with Barbies, but I got one Barbie once because it was a paleontologist Barbie, and I got it. And I'm like, this is really lame. Then I just like ripped it apart with my T-Rex toys, and that's how I play with Barbies.
Just humming to yourself. Buh, 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 buh. This is amazing. I feel like the collectible toy idea, like, because, you know, which is also like totally a pandering to nostalgia. Like, let's create these toys that are so awesome that we would have absolutely killed to have had when we were like 5 and 6 years old and whatever. But don't you dare take them out of the box because you paid $25 for it. Like, I feel like the collectible toy market has kind of taken that away a lot of the time from kids. Cause even like the Transformers and G.I. Joes and stuff that you get at like Target, they're pretty pricey, and they're almost intended, you know, this is a Target exclusive Transformer. Like, that's dumb. Like, launching your He-Man. Like, I used to make parachutes for my G.I. Joes and throw them off the roof of my house. Like, you know, that's toys are toys. You know, we get sample toys every once in a while from companies, and we do like unboxings and we open them and whatever. And then I just give them to my kids. And I'm like, dude, go play with this. Like, my daughter has Amigo Bella Lugosi Dracula that she sleeps with. Like, she keeps it in her bed. It's one of her like stuffed animals basically, but
nice.
She has adventures with like her like stuffed unicorn and Dracula, you know, and that's, it's so awesome. Like, it's awesome that you can, toys are toys, like, and they should be played with and they should be fun. And I love hearing stories of how, you know, previous generations did that. And I try to encourage my kids to do that too. Like, you should have a bin full of broken toys that you love. Like, there's nothing wrong with that, you know, and the collectible stuff can be for rich people or whatever. Sorry. I get distracted, but it's awesome. Like, I love that the idea behind your book allows like these kind of conversations. I hope that when you guys are working on it, you have them too.
We do.
Awesome.
Norm actually sends me pictures of the Legos he's working on.
Nice. Oh man, Legos are the best too. That's like a whole nother conversation.
Norm's a Lego master. Right, Norm? Would you consider yourself a master?
No, not a master.
No.
The correct term is Lego Maniac.
Oh, sorry, right. You're right. That's the term I was looking for.
Oh, man. So here's kind of my final question. Sorry, it's been like a very tangential like interview, but I'm loving it. Have you guys thought about doing an 80s style toy or like, you know, serial commercial-ish commercial for the comic book with just like a bunch of kids being crazy about the comic book?
I had not, but now that you say that, that would be awesome. Or like the kids playing with like the most elaborate like cityscape you've ever seen, and then just issues of the comic like squaring off. Like,
yeah.
Like, nothing can stop issue 2. Oh no, it's issue 3.
And like they've got to fly through the air with like a little caption underneath it that says comic books do not actually fly through air.
Yeah.
Knock over a stack of cups. Like, no, I've been defeated.
Oh, I love crashing through the cups. Yeah. So fun.
Now we're doing that.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad that I could help with that, because seriously, I can't tell you how many toys I pestered my parents about because of those stupid, like, they're in like these amazing, like, you know, modeled backdrops for like a G.I. Joe with two kids just leaning over like a railroad model style thing going pew, 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 pew.
Like a Doug Trench and everything.
Yeah. So crazy. Your parents are like, it's not going to look like that. I don't care. I want it. It's going to be so awesome. This will be life changing. Well, when that comes out, you got to tag us in it, because that's awesome. I hope you guys do it.
Not it. I don't want to make it.
Oh, man. That's awesome.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. That was amazing. Now that our listeners have listened to us giggle about nostalgia and toys and pew pews, how can people find this comic book so that they can have a good time too?
This comic, if you go to fanbasepress.com, they have a page for the sequels. They're a publisher, and the comic's going to drop in February. Issue 1 will come out on Comixology, and then 1 a month on Comixology after that. And then in July, we will come out with a printed trade. And at fanbasepress.com right now, you can pre-order the printed trade. And if you pre-order, you will get a set of art prints based on the cover art that the entire creative team will have signed. And so that'll be pretty awesome. So you should go and pre-order now. But you can start reading in February, issue 1, on Comixology. And also follow Fanbase Press on all your social media platforms so you can stay up to date on when they come out. And you can also follow the creative team. I'm at that Norm Dude on Twitter and Instagram.
I'm at Fishmas. That's like Fish Christmas. It's a long story.
Fishmas.
It's definitely a story I want to know someday, though.
Oh, and I guess I'm at Bobby Timoney on Instagram and Twitter. And then I have my own website that I run with my brother called Twin Comics.
That is awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for being on the show. Like, I'm excited for this book. Like, I think it has a lot of like awesome ideas going for it, and you guys seem like the people to make it. And also just a huge shout out to Fanbase Press. We love you guys. Absolutely stoked on everything that they're putting out. So you guys are hooked up with a really good publishing company. Like, I have yet to read something they put out that I haven't loved. So
yeah.
They're great.
They are great. They're huge friends of the show, but it's awesome that they keep putting out like really quality stuff. And if they're putting you out, that means they think it's quality. So I'm super excited for you guys. I wish you the best of luck, and I hope you guys do awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Walks podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast, Barren Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Barren Space production.